An hour of Bill's thoughts on what's going on in Connecticut. Wake up with Bill Finch, only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome to Wake Up here, Sunday mornings on WICC AM and FM, every Sunday at 10, where Connecticut, are you tired of being divided and manipulated? Are you tired of Fox News and the right-wing screamers and whiners of talk radio? Tired of entertainment masquerading as news, ignoring the complex policy issues of the day? Are you tired of science deniers, billionaires, bullies, and politicians who don't fight climate change? Then you found your home here on The Voice of Connecticut. For 1 hour every Sunday, we attempt to provide a patriotic, full-throated endorsement of the pillars of our democracy and red meat for the ideals that built a great nation. Today, we bring voices to you that you haven't heard before. I'm your host, Bill Finch. I'm joined in the studio here by Victoria Wooder, who will be doing the last segment on banned books. We've got a great book. We're going to review for you today, one that I think should be required reading for most 17-year-old kids. But it's banned by the far right, the Christian nationalists, the cuckoo birds of this country. But our special guest calling in soon, we hope, all the way from Costa Rica, is Chris Inman. And I want to tell you a little bit about Chris before he joins us here. And, of course, you know, with Costa Rica lines all the way from across the ocean, maybe he's going to have to send it by passenger pigeon, a carrier pigeon. But I met Chris. He's a Fairfield County guy who grew up in Connecticut, and now he lives in Costa Rica. He has one of the most interesting stories, and I met him about 6 months ago in Costa Rica when I was dropping a couple hundred bucks on gifts for all of my family back here in Connecticut. And Chris and his wife run a couple stores in Marriott's in Costa Rica, and he also is a grower of coffee, and he's restoring lands that have been They're tired lands. They've been over-farmed. They've had troubles. And he's painstakingly restoring these lands using native species and other things he's going to tell us about. But he's also supporting the growth of this incredible country. You know, if you don't know about Costa Rica, they have no military. And they put all of the money that we put into military in our budget, they put it into education and healthcare. So although they don't have quite the same standard of living as Americans, they are an amazing country that's doing amazing things to fight climate change. In fact, President Figueres was the president of Costa Rica, both the sister and the brother, and they both led the UN effort of IPCC and the Paris Accords from its very inception. And what a more appropriate place in the world than the green nature-based economy of Costa Rica. And I know that Chris has just joined us, but I want to just tell you a little bit more before we put him live on the air. The gift shops that he and his wife have put into Marriott's in Costa Rica are just one of the ways he supports sustainability. All the gifts are sourced locally, and they're supporting the local creative classes. Beautiful, beautiful gifts of Costa Rica, celebrating the oneness of mankind with nature in almost every gift in the store. And he is also a visiting professor at Cornell University and he's had visiting professorships at places like Columbia as well. But it's because he has a passion for having tourism. You know, it's tough to have sustainable tourism because you're getting on a jet and you've got a huge carbon footprint in that transportation. But once you're at these locations in exotic, beautiful, nature-based places to stay that Chris runs, he's able to reduce people's carbon footprint. At the same time, he's selling coffee that he sources from organic sources in Costa Rica. And he's just a wonderful man that I wanted to share his story with his former county mates here in Connecticut. Chris, are you there?
Good morning, Fairfield County.
Hey, how's the weather in Costa Rica?
Yes, I'm here. Oh, my gosh. I don't know what it is there right now, but if it is possible to be any better than here, I will be surprised. It's probably 79 degrees Fahrenheit. The sky is deep blue with a few of those puffy clouds, and humidity is probably higher here than it is there. But at this temperature, it just feels luxurious.
Comfortable. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Well, everybody knowing my background has always said, you've got to go to Costa Rica. Luckily, my girlfriend Joanne had a trip arranged there, and I was able to tag along. And I have to say, I was blown away. Obviously, there's a significant amount of poverty, and the standard of living is a little bit below what Americans are used to. But, of course, every place after America, generally, the standard of living is not as consumptive or as wasteful as it is here. And you just see a lot of smiling faces. And I just think there's something that Costa Rica could teach the rest of us. And you having sort of, I don't want to say abandoned the rat race of Fairfield County, but you certainly had a choice to make in your life. And let's just talk about that, Chris, because I think so much of what you do is driven by sustainability. You heard my little rant, my little intro.
Yep.
I've been involved with conservation since before the first Earth Day, and I know you have been all of your life as well. So we had sort of kindred spirits. We hit it off in your gift shop, beautiful gift shop. Authentica, I believe, is the name of your gift shops?
Correct. That's right. Good memory.
Well, you know, the Internet's a wonderful thing. I had to refresh my memory a little
bit.
And
thanks for making your purchases. I know there was some coffee in there. I don't remember what the other items were, but I just heard you describe correctly that the goal of that shop and the goal especially of the coffee that we sell in the Authentica shops, it's what you'd call a mission-driven company or an impact-oriented business. It's harder and harder, as all your listeners would know if they travel outside the United States, but also, you know, you don't need to travel to see this thing. It's in the news right now, all the things that are made elsewhere. I tend to, you know, I grew up economically thinking, you know, that free trade was a good idea. I still think free trade or free-ish trade is a good idea. But of all the things in the world that maybe should be made locally as opposed to sourcing from a lower-cost economy, when you travel, you're looking for things that are made locally. That's just the history.
I'll summarize it for you. You don't want to buy a lot of stuff made in a sweatshop somewhere in a third world nation. You want to buy local creative stuff from the soul
That's
of the people.
It.
Listen, we've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back after these messages with Chris Inman, who is a world changer. And that's why I want you to listen to what he has to say in the next half hour or so. We'll be right back after this.
Let's find out what's on Bill's mind today. It's Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up. And what's on my mind is what's on my mind, unfortunately, just about every day. And that's how we save our planet from climate change. There are, you know, a couple people here and there screaming on the street corner, not completely sane, who are yelling that it's not true, but other than that, the world is joined at the hip. Unfortunately, one of those crazy people screaming is now in the White House. But everyone else believes that climate change is real and we need to do something about it. Our government will be pulling back now from its efforts under President Biden, which were monumental and in all the right directions. Unfortunately, the screamer in the White House is going to undo that. I think this is a perfect time to talk to people like Chris Inman, because Chris is making the private market work in the right direction. I always told people when I was mayor and we did Be Green 2020 and our sustainability effort, which reduced the greenhouse gases within the city of Bridgeport by 5% in 4 years. No one's ever done that. We're really proud of the city in doing that. Obviously, if all cities could do that, we'd be well along the way. But cities could still do it, regardless of what kind of cuckoo is calling the shots nationwide. But also businesses can, and it's much bigger than government. So people like Chris Inman, we have now live on the line from Costa Rica, is going to tell us how he ended up in Costa Rica, what his life mission is to make money by doing the right thing. Do I have that right, Chris?
And thank you for that. That's a really kind introduction. And I think the beginning of the story is important. Had to do with my graduate studies at Cornell. And I really just, as I told you when we met in Costa Rica some months ago, it was just the luckiest thing that I found a research topic that matched my interest in the tourism industry, which I grew up working in the hospitality business, and combined it with a research topic having to do with conservation, which is a personal interest, and came up with this model for how you could design an economy around business people treating conservation or treating nature, if you want, as a profit opportunity with conservation as part of the business model. And tourism just happened to be a very good industry example where that's easier than most other industries. And Costa Rica happened to be at the right moment at that point 30 years ago where it was thinking about developing tourism, and my dissertation topic just happened to be maybe the only quantitative research, empirical research done at that time that gave some hope that you could design a portion of your economy where business people would treat conservation as a positive input for investment as opposed to just a regulation or just where the conservation is a function of generous philanthropists, which was pretty much the whole history of conservation until very recently.
And, you know, I think it's no surprise to me, having visited Costa Rica, that Chris Inman, our guest this morning, ended up in Costa Rica, because Costa Rica has bet heavy on preserving nature, preserving our planet, and making money off of it. I used to say when I was more active in the political world that green is green. The green of money can be made off of living in harmony with nature, and no place that I've ever seen does it like Costa Rica. What is it, Chris? About 60% of the landmass of Costa Rica is national parks?
It's not quite 60%, and it's a mix of national parks and what are called private protected areas. But the government right now estimates that it's approaching 30%, which itself, it doesn't sound as impressive as 60, but for any country to have roughly, 30% of its landmass
preserved,
protected this way, yeah, is unprecedented.
And wildlife is all around you. I mean, coming out to one of your stores out on the ocean on the West Coast, there's a big river, and we went over it, and there were alligators swimming around under the bridge.
Crocodiles, yeah.
Crocodiles.
The New World. Yep.
We had the most lovely driver who pointed out all the places to go look for sloths and for macaws and for monkeys, and the wildlife just seems to be all around you. It's kind of hard to say, let's plunder that place and put up condos when your economy is tied to it.
That's true, and I have to be honest, in the 30 years that we've been here as a family, our two boys were born up in Ithaca, New York, but grew up in Costa Rica, and now are adults. All of us would say, we can remember 30 years ago things that we liked better before the, not just tourism, but the whole economic development. Costa Rica has really done well with both this concept of conservation being a good business opportunity and what you mentioned at the beginning of the show. It's a country with no military. So all of that, you might call it a peace dividend of not having a military, creates an exceptionally well-educated populace. So engineering and software and biotechnology are also big industries that you'd consider clean industries. But we all look at life today, 30 years after we arrived, and say, boy,
a lot different, all the
improvement. Yeah, it's a lot different, and there are more condominiums. There are more people that want to live here as a retirement place or second home place. So you see a footprint, but the difference here and other places where tourism development and real estate development have happened is it's very noticeable how much more careful it is here than most other places. So you're right about that.
Well, you know, we are an invasive species if you really want to get down to it. And, and obviously the impact of human beings on the planet is catastrophic. I mean, I'm happy to be here, and I'm not going to apologize for my carbon footprint, but I do try to minimize it so I can stretch out the amount of time that the Earth remains habitable above ground. You know, everybody forgets that it took the dinosaurs almost 1,000 years to go extinct, and now we're in a period of rapid extinction much faster than when the asteroid hit the Earth and the dinosaurs went, and it's because of overdevelopment and the human footprint and climate change and a host of other reasons that are complex, but it's conscious development, it seems, in Costa Rica. It's pretty thoughtful. Now, there's a lot of scattered development where it doesn't appear to be strict zoning as you drive to certain places. So I think they have that as a challenge, more strict zoning to regulate, your property, your appearance, your method of construction, all that kind of stuff. There's some casualness to Costa Rica's residential communities in some places. But you just can't help but that's a minor critique when you think about the overwhelming consensus that everybody seems to have that nature is around them and very important. And matter of fact, we rely on nature for our lives.
Yeah. If I may, just for your listeners who have not been here, but even those of you who have and know what Bill was just describing there, that what looks like unregulated or unplanned, some of what you see here, I want to just point out that this country is right in the pathway of, you know, this giant political topic right now, immigration into the United States. And Costa Rica is a passing point for just about every person coming from South America trying to get to the North. And one of the things that results from that is it's a developing country, but it's better off than most in the region.
Oh, certainly.
And Costa Ricans are super generous and welcoming, not just to people like me with a PhD and to investors who are putting up other kinds of businesses, but it's also remarkably generous with what little it has to the refugees who are coming from Venezuela and Colombia and also from the north, from Nicaragua. And they pass through, and what you see sometimes that looks like what people call a shanty development, there's not that much of it, and it tends to be kept more orderly than other places I've been in the world. But you still wonder, you know, why is that there? And
well, another good reason to love that country, because
it is
one of the most generous places I've ever visited, and certainly they made me feel as an American so welcome and wanted to share their views on things, and especially the nature. So we're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour for news and weather, and we're going to be back with Chris Inman, who's going to tell us how he's trying to export his sustainability ethic while developing tourism and also bringing people in touch with nature, but doing it without hurting nature. And I think it's a great lesson for us at this time and place. We'll be back after the news with Chris Inman and talk more about his efforts worldwide. Be right back after this break.
Fairfield County Talk for a Sunday morning. Wake up with Bill Finch is live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
And welcome back. And what does Fairfield County have to do with Costa Rica? Well, our guest, Chris Inman, is a refugee of Fairfield County living in Costa Rica, changing the world with his attitudes and his teachings and his investments. Chris, there's so much to talk about with you. I really wish this show was longer today. We only have about another 10 minutes, but I really would love for you to comment on, number one, I'm just curious, did your kids decide to stay in Costa Rica?
Both of our sons are in the United States now. There's a Connecticut connection with one of them, even though they both grew up here. They both went north for their for their education as adults. And our older son, Seth, went to Cornell as an undergraduate, but then after working for a few years with us in Costa Rica, got his graduate degree in Connecticut in the field of environmental management, and he is now in the field that you call carbon project development. So he works all over Africa and South America. He's trilingual, wow. So he does a lot of work in Francophone countries. So both of them are up north now, but Seth is mostly working in places where large-scale forest protection is his immediate work responsibility.
Well, the apple didn't fall far from the tree with you and your wife being so active in the field. Now, you are taking lands, as I understand it, that have been stressed and restoring them. And is that to grow coffee on, or is that just to restore the land? Okay, so tell us about that effort.
That's a very good memory you have, and it's the specific mission of our coffee business within our gift shops, and we do have the two in the Marriotts, and then we have three others around the country. So we've got five shops.
And by the way, it's online, Organic Coast Coffee. You can order it.
Right.
Very good.
Thank you.
And you can have a clear conscience knowing that it supported local workers and it didn't harm the environment. Organic Coast Coffee with a K.
Thank you for that. And on that website, you can find a magazine article that'll tell you in more detail, but there's a section in there about our conservation efforts. And basically the idea is the son who did the graduate degree in environmental management was sort of co-founder with me when we were starting the shops. And we decided that one product within all the things we sell in our shops, it is, as a category, it's the most important product. And what we've found now is that people get back to the United States in particular. People travel from all over the world to Costa Rica, but roughly 70% come from the United States. And they started asking us for when they take their coffee home, they enjoyed it. They found the value that, you know, the price per quality was quite good. And we started selling it in the United States. And so we decided at the very beginning, even before we knew we would distribute in the United States as well as in our shops, that for that one product in our shops, we would commit 100% of the profits. Normally, you hear about B Corp or other, you know, impact investment vehicles putting 5% or, you know, maybe 20%. But we figured with this one product line, we could, we'd earn our money from selling all the other things in the shops, but coffee, we would dedicate 100% of those profits to regenerating land, starting with one particular piece of land.
You're like Paul Newman in Costa Rica, Newman's Own, Inman's Own.
Oh, man, old hero of mine. There's no doubt that he had
a
huge impact on my thinking that business can be for a good outcome. And for sure, our coffee, you could say it's modeled
after. You don't
want
to be a billionaire, Chris?
I could tell you I would be a lot wealthier if I took some other approach, but I do get what billionaires may get as pleasure from all that money. I get equivalent pleasure, and I mean this quite honestly, because I've now been working on this particular plot of land that used to be a coffee farm. It was abandoned, and the earth that was the coffee farm got buried under dirt that was piled on top of it by a builder.
Oh,
and it's not bad dirt, but it's not live dirt.
Right.
So for the last 5 years, we've been regenerating that soil and
how
reestablishing
do you do
the coffee
farm. You get organics back in the soil. How do you do that?
Well, it's a matter of planting certain plants that fix nitrogen. There's a tree here that is very common on coffee farms.
What is it called?
It's called poro, P-O-R-O. And Costa Rica is not the only country, but it's the country with the most poro trees per acre of coffee farms, so that it does two things. It fixes nitrogen. It's technically in the legume family, like beans.
Mm.
So it's a nitrogen fixer. But it's also shade. It's a canopy that allows the coffee to grow.
Keeps the moisture in the soil.
It's partly about moisture in the soil, but it keeps the sun from baking the coffee which it would do in an open field.
Quite a synergy there.
Poro trees we've planted the fewest number because it's trees, but they stabilize the soil, you know, physically with their roots as well.
So how many years have you been working at doing this?
Just 5 years. We started during literally the pandemic. We opened the shops just prior to the pandemic, and then the country shut down right about 3 months after we started. And that, it didn't give me any money to work with, but it allowed me a lot of time to figure out this particular plot of land. And so I've been working that just about every morning for 5 years. So
can people see it on the internet? Can they see your work?
I haven't put it somewhere visible, but now that you say that, I should put a Google Earth link on our website.
Yeah.
Thank you for that idea.
Listen,
and
do you ever see those things on the web where these, you know, this couple retired, they went off to some place that was arid and they've had this little, you know, 50, 60 acres, and you see what it looked like when they started the land and how green and flourishing it is now. I'm sure you've seen those on the internet. I'm sure our listeners have seen it. But I'm fascinated by those things because it's earth sculpting. And, you know, Connecticut is the home of Frederick Law Olmsted, who believed in sculpting the earth to make it sort of a miniature Connecticut all over the place. We're really so fortunate to have had you on this show, Chris. We only have a couple minutes left, and then we go to a regular segment we have with Victoria Woodard from Orange, just outside of Fairfield County, but we count it as. And she talks about books that the Christian nationalist, Moms for Liberty. They're not for liberty because it's against your liberty to read. They want you to ban books. And so what we try to do is give guidance every other week to moms and dads on what age is appropriate for some of these books because they do deal with difficult subjects. But we do that at the last end of the show. We've got a couple minutes here for you to give us your advice for the planet. Give us your advice that you've learned on how do you get businesses to be even more of an engine and by following your example.
Yeah, and I don't know that I could say for all kinds of businesses, but there are certain kinds of businesses that lend themselves well to this approach that we've been working with. And I started in the tourism field developing and managing eco-lodges, and some of them became extremely successful, earning very high income that was then all profits plowed back into, say, protecting 1,000 acres of rainforest. Tourism lends itself really well to that. Food and beverage products lend themselves well to that. And it doesn't have to be like what we're doing with Organicos, which is 100% of the profits. It can be 5% or
sure,
whatever your investment vehicle allows. Because what we've discovered is that Americans in particular, and I just don't know the rest of the world as well enough, but I know American travelers, and when they go home, American consumers, they have an experience here that they're willing to pay a premium for if they are convinced that part of that premium is going to protect what they came to see, the nature. And the same thing with the coffee. I get just tons of communications from people who otherwise would just be ordering coffee off a website, but they write to let us know that conservation message is a big part of why they're buying our particular coffee. It's as good, and the price is, you know, value pricing, but they chose ours versus another one in large part because of this conservation commitment. So
well, I'm
that's
hoping
right
that
there. That's the business logic.
Listen, it's Sunday morning. Everybody's perking the old percolator right now to make coffee. It could come from anywhere. Why not come from the hands of the people and like Chris Inman and his workers in Costa Rica, where we're plowing some of that profit back into the earth to make the earth even more flourishing than the way we've left it. So, Chris, give us a website for people to check out. And unfortunately, we're going to have to take a break. But please tell everybody how to reach you.
Sure. It's www.organicos with a K, organicos.com, organicos.com.
Well, I hope you'll agree with me right here and now that at some point in the future we come back and talk more about the progress of your restoration efforts as well as your advice to businesses in America. So thank you, Chris Denman. We're going to take a break, and we hope to have Chris back on the show again at some point soon.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill's got a lot on his mind. So let's get right to it. You're listening to Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Well, welcome back to Wake Up, where we're going to transition ever so gracefully from living in harmony with nature to dying of drug addiction and a book called Crank, where it's a young woman who becomes addicted to methamphetamine, and very, very sad. The woman basically has two sides of her personality, where she's a risk taker named Bree and she's a good girl named Christina.
Yes.
I was floored by the book. Vic, you're going to walk us through it, but I think anyone who looks at this book, as difficult it is as it is, could understand why a parent would encourage their child, not ban it, but actually encourage a child to read this for some guidance on the pitfalls of young adulthood.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really hard one.
To tell the author.
Oh, yeah. So this is Crank by Ellen Hopkins. And she writes quite a few young adult books with incredibly hard topics.
It's hard to believe this was not a first person biographical.
Well, it actually is loosely based off of her daughter's experience.
Oh, my goodness. So, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yes, this is loosely based on her daughter's addiction to crystal meth. And it was her first novel. And then she followed it. There are actually two more in the series, Glass and Fallout. And then she's written other series with, you know, equally tough topics. So I'll just quickly run you through. So Impulse is about teen suicide. Tricks is about prostitution and teen prostitution and sex trafficking. Burned is about cults and extremist religious experiences. Triangles and Tilt are about teen sex and pregnancy and HIV. And those are just some of her.
So they're all banned by the Moms for Liberty.
They are, actually. They are all.
Well, the common theme here with Moms for Liberty is if it's relevant to coming of age as a teenager, if it uses the word gay or drugs,
yeah,
they're going to tell people they can't read them.
It's not just them. I will say, you know, that group is responsible for a lot of
I just like to
challenges.
Pick on them because they know. Drive me nuts.
Because
they have liberty in their name. It's the anti-liberty.
It really is. They're the voice behind a lot of challenges and kind of the instigator behind a lot of challenges. But it is far, far reaching and more broad than that.
Sure.
But
thank you for correcting.
I've gotta show up and be honest, or nobody will trust what I say. And then she also writes a couple middle grade books that are a little more soft touch with some equally tough topics. What About Will also deals with addiction, an injury that leads to addiction, which is really common.
It's common, sure.
It's really, really common. People get injured. They're on, you know, pain meds to help manage that injury, and then, you know, they don't
look, you know,
let go.
What teens are coming to grips with that we already know because we're adults is life is not easy.
Life
it's
is not
tough.
Easy.
Sometimes you don't even want to get out of bed in the morning. Now, all of a sudden, a little magic substance comes and makes you elevated to the highest you've ever been in your life. You want to go back to the struggle
right.
of going to work and finding a ride to work. And not having money for the
and
rent.
School,
or
you know,
could you be elevated to the highest things you've ever felt?
With Crank,
kids
you know,
don't realize the long term implication.
They don't.
I've lived the long term, so
yeah. I mean, I've seen the long term.
You're
implications,
halfway in long
right?
term.
with Crank, one of the things that was really eye opening for me was that this could be anyone, and you know, I have
right?
firsthand
yeah.
knowledge of that. You know,
you had friends that
friends, family. You know, child of addiction. My father was an addict. And, you know, that led to his death. My mom, thankfully, was never and is amazing and incredible. And
happy you know, Mother's Day, everybody.
Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. you know, but
I should have said that right at the top of the show. What kind of dunce am I?
I don't know.
On radio,
Bill,
you
really
have to say Happy Mother's Day.
Dropped that ball.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
You know, and one of the things that really hits me on Mother's Day as we talk about this book, again, is Ellen Hopkins wrote this loosely on her own daughter's experience. And she acknowledges in some
How
interviews.
How many bad Mother's Days did she have?
Well, for sure. But she acknowledges in part, you know, hey, maybe I had something to do with how this started.
Yeah. And all parents do that, don't we?
They do. And, you know, I do want to first say, you know, addiction is a disease. And, you know, I will fight you on that if you say
sure it
otherwise.
Is, yeah. Well, it's in and the DSM.
Yeah. But you can't blame manual. Somebody else either. You know, nobody, or well, in some cases you are forced, right? But nobody forces you to make the decision that starts this. So it must be so grueling as a parent to watch your child really fall apart. And especially because kids make these decisions when they're so young with, again, any real thought about the consequence. One of the characters who's not the main character in this book talks about how she got started using crank, and that it was because there was so much pressure between, I believe she was a cheerleader, between cheerleading and academics and just having to, like, get through it all. She needed the energy boost. And then once you start, how do you get away from that?
Sure.
And I think that's something that any student can really relate to. And to see the outcome of that, hey, you know, I just needed this extra boost, but now my entire life has been derailed, sure, is really important.
Well, you know, as I told my kids growing up, there's a bell curve for everything. Mm-hmm. And we do know on the bell curve of the predictability of addiction, either through alcohol or other substances, you fall somewhere on that curve.
You do.
All humans fall on a curve for every trait, mm-hmm, right? And I just like to give a shout out to John Hamilton and the great crew over at Liberation Programs, Bridgeport, Stanford, and Norwalk, where we have outpatient, inpatient, we have even residential, and residential for women with children. So all the girls that are at the Lib House at our residential program near Norwalk Hospital, happy Mother's Day to all of you. Happy Sober Mother's Day. Keep up the great work. But, you know, in the ultimate, anybody could be addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how do we protect them? We don't protect them by banning a book that colorfully and powerfully describes the process of giving into the addictive,
right,
quality.
Well, and I think there's so much.
This book
much,
will help people, don't you think?
Absolutely. There's so much we can learn.
It was
learn
hard
from this
to
book.
Read.
Very hard to read. Really, really hard to read.
Because you're rooting for this girl, and every time she's at that point between using and,
yeah,
not using, you want to
say,
no, no, come with me. We're going to go,
yeah,
fishing.
You
we're
really
going to
read
a book. We're gonna,
you really think she's going to beat
plant
it.
Plant a tree.
You know, the way this book, which is the first in the series of three, the way this book ends, it does allude to the fact that she doesn't win,
yeah,
this battle. She does, I don't want to spoil too much, but, you know, there is sexual assault in this book. So
and amazingly, please, she and her boyfriend agree to go through with having a baby they know is not the boyfriend,
yeah,
who is standing by her,
right,
but it's the rapist. And,
yeah,
that to me was, wow, that's...
Well, it really shows you that there, you know, there are so many good people out here who are trying to help and who are trying to...
And let's not forget...
You know, bring the light.
In many red states now, she would have no choice.
She would have no choice.
She
did
made
have
that
a choice
on her own, mm-hmm, as did my mother, who was... I was born out of wedlock, and she had the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, reading a book or not reading a book, having the baby you're pregnant with or not having the baby you're pregnant with,
it just has to be your choice. Nobody
it's
should be controlling those decisions.
An individual choice. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the theme here.
Listen, it is Mother's Day, and I wish everybody who, you know, is a mother a happy Mother's Day, or wants to be a mother, or plays a, you know, a parental role a happy Mother's
People
Day.
People could be a mother. My sister helped raise my two,
exactly,
children, my four children, and she mothered them, but she never had any of her own, but,
yeah,
she chose that.
And I acknowledge that it's a hard day for some.
Thank you,
and
Betsy.
I imagine parents of addicts, it's especially hard today and, you know, every day. But ultimately, at the end of every episode, I do try and share my thoughts on who should be reading this book. And again, this was a really hard read for me, as I suspect will be most of Ellen Hopkins's books, because, as I mentioned, really tough topics. But I think these are important. And everybody that I've spoken to about this book so far has said the same thing. Some were actually required to read this in high school and valued that experience.
So I think 15, 16 is a good age.
Yeah. Listen, this girl, this happens when she's 16 years old. So again, I say when the main character can experience it, you,
yeah,
should be able to read about it.
Well, how appropriate we read this book that dealt with so many important issues on Mother's Day. We want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Wake Up is here, courtesy of Connoisseur Media, every Sunday at 10 to 11. WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Thank you to our new producer in the booth today, Andrea. Let's hear for Andrea. Good job today, Andrea. Thank you so much. You were terrific, and I want to welcome everybody back to the show next week. We won't have Vic, but we'll have her in 2 weeks. Thanks, everybody. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.